Peru. So we're traveling, you know. And actually, I was born on Guam. It's in the Marianas Islands. It's about 1,000 miles west of the Philippines. And my parents were there at the end of World War II. And I grew up in Southern California, Arizona, and went to University of California. And I graduated in psychology with minor studies in biology and electrical engineering, like that, yeah. First place prize. And I started a doctorate program in Chicago at Northwestern University. But by then I was kind of thinking Western knowledge was very limited because I'd gone through like, you know, engineering, physics, life sciences, and then psychology. And so my mentor for the doctorate was Donald Campbell. And he was president of the American Psychological Association. Real genius, very wonderful person. So he agreed. He said, yeah, you know, Western knowledge is just one way of looking at things, you know, and there's many other ways. So he actually inspired me to stop, to take time off from the PhD program. And then I studied improvisational theater in the Second City. It's one of the most famous improvisational theater groups. So I was an understudy with them in Chicago. It was very nice. Then I headed east, and I got a black belt in Okinawan karate, like that. And one time when I was studying, my instructor, he pulled me to one side from the practice, and he said, okay, now I'm going to teach you the most ancient and the most effective form of self-defense. And it's not run fu. Sorry, it's not kung fu, it's run fu, right? Like that. This is the most ancient and most effective form of self-defense. Run fu. Okay, like that. So I learned that lesson very well. You know. Now I am a 22nd degree yellow belt in run fu. Like that, yeah. So then I was continuing, and then I came in contact with this tradition. The Hare Krishna movement is like a popular name for the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Sampradaya. It's a very traditional, you know, Indian philosophical tradition, monastic tradition, going back through Bengal to South India through Madhvacharya, with very great, powerful, renowned philosophers and scholars. And so in this tradition, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, whose statue is here, you know, was, you know, on the order of his spiritual master and part of the culture, was trying to propagate this ideas, this knowledge, you know, to help people. So in 1961, he was invited to a congress in Japan. Actually, I have a PowerPoint show for this, but you know, it's better without it, maybe. You know. On cultivation of the human spirit, 1961. And he was thinking that, of course, the best, you know, message, education, communication, enlightenment that the Indian culture has is the Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. But it's about 18,000 verses, so you know, it's too much for people to understand at one Congress. So he selected one chapter, which is from the 10th canto, and it's called a description of autumn. And there the great sage, poet, Sukadeva Goswami, 5,000 years ago, in the age of bronze, he's describing the seasons, the summer, rainy season. When it gets hot enough, the rain starts to fall. We get this rainy season. Then after the rainy season, there's autumn. And now it's not too hot, not too cold, and so many things happen. So many, many things happening like that. And from these, Sukadeva Goswami is giving analogies to understand what is life, what is society, what is this world, what is the cosmos, what is the goal of life, you know, what is religion, all these things like that. Yeah. So Prabhupada then wrote little descriptions for each of the verses, and he did a little commentary, an explanation, because it's 5,000 years old. It's in Sanskrit. And these were submitted, but he wasn't able to go, finally. But after some time later, then an artist was found, Madame Li Ying Shuang. She was born in Tinsay Hopei, China, 1924. And she was very inspired by the text, the content, and she agreed, yes, I would like very much to illustrate these. And actually, it was one of the last things she did. She was very famous. She was a part of the Chinese painting research institute in China, which is a very prestigious, powerful organization. And when she left China to come to Hong Kong, she wanted to take her principal paintings with her, but the communist government said, nope, these are national Chinese art treasury. You can go, but these can't. So she decided to go anyway. And so then she's the person who then did all these paintings like that. And there are 48 verses, 48 paintings. And then just recently in South America, the book has been printed several times in different languages, Russian, Swedish, but just recently, because it was out of print in English, we just reprinted it in South America. It's my first time printing a book, and boy, it's hard work. We had a lot of mistakes, a lot of problems, but I learned a lot. But we did it in Spanish and English, like that, with all the color plates, and very nice for contemplation. And then the back, after that, it has the commentary, the explanation for each plate in detail like that, So tonight we just maybe just give a little introduction, But again, it was designed for a certain kind of audience. We also, with the Bhaktivedanta Institute, I was a director. I wasn't the director. I was a director, like one of the directors. And with that, we have programs with Nobel laureates, Charles Townes, George Wald, so many very powerful people. Had a big congress in Calcutta, Bombay, 1984. First World Congress for a synthesis from science and religion. And that was very successful. Five Nobel laureates participated in the ideas, president of the World Council of Churches, and it was very nice. For example, Charles Townes, he's a Nobel laureate and physicist. You know him at all? You probably don't know him, but he has influenced, practically speaking, probably everybody's life here. He's the person who invented the laser. And first off, it was the MASER, microwave amplification stimulated by electromagnetic radiation. He got his Nobel Prize. Then he developed it and he got the laser like that. So eye surgery, so many things. It's just everywhere like that. Other things too. And very nice man, So at this Congress, he was talking about this, this necessity for these two great cultures, religion and science, to have some connection, Before the Cartesian split, before the time of Descartes, it was one thing. Science and religion belonged to the same group of people. The priest would investigate nature and different kinds of animals and active drugs and things like that, medicines like that. But then at some point it became separated because this, it became this conflict between reason and intuition and things like that, in the West. In traditional Vedic culture, it's not separated. The monk, we got a monk here, sannyasi, right? He's supposed to know both of these things. Traditionally speaking, the monks would understand that the medical system, which is called Ayurveda, and you take the pulse, you look at the tongue, and a few things like that, and you can see, this is what's happening. The heat in the body is not flowing properly, and this and that. I myself, I always had problems with my body as a child, and it was Western medicine was just bewildered, Now, for example, I had an allergy test. They do scratch your back 48 times. Anybody here have an allergy test? Yeah, they scratch your back, this and that, okay. And you get different reactions to different things. So I had an allergic reaction to distilled water. That was the final test, So the doctor chastised the nurse, and she said, I used a clean needle, everything else. He said, boom, So he did it again, came back, and I had another reaction to distilled water, So she was looking very, self-righteous, So he called for three needles, three bottles, and stabbed me again three times, and every single time, So he said, this is impossible. You can't be allergic to distilled water. You'd be dead, So many things like this, So finally what I discovered according to Ayurveda is the fire glands, the pancreas, all these things that produce heat in the body are very weak. And looking at my family tradition, it's a fact, And so because of that, I get these certain allergy reactions. It's all reading the Ayurveda, it's yep, that's what I have. And so I've been able to reduce it by, 90%, So it's another kind of medical system, but it deals more with the natural flow of energy in the body and the heat and the fluids and stuff like that, So the brahmanas, they were supposed to be, to know this, And also they would know palmistry, astrology, And they would look at somebody and they would say, oh, this happens to you, that happens to you, this is your karma, your nature. And so you should look for this kind of work, you should expect for these years, you know, this will happen. And okay, then your health, your destiny, like that. And then finally, this ontological knowledge. What is the real nature of the soul? What are we really hankering for? What are we trying to get, really? And then they were fully involved in religion and science both. And they were wandering everywhere. Everybody had access to them. Didn't require big medical insurance or anything else like that. So very sophisticated system, you know. So, you know, Charles Townes invented the laser there. And he was coming to this thing and talking, you know, trying to participate in this dialogue about science and religion, how they should work together again more, you know. And he was making this point. He was saying that many of my colleagues, scientists, they say that there is no ethics and morality in science. Science is completely impartial, rational, like that, you know. But he said, but truth is a very ethical principle, right? You know, honest, dishonest. It's a very ethical principle. And he said, that is the basis of science, right? If you're dishonest in science, if you falsify the results of some experiment, you're finished. And you won't get another job for the rest of your life. Practically speaking, it's impossible to compensate for what you did. You're out like that. So they're very, very strict in certain ways about what is about truth. Truth like that. You know? But other things like mercy, cleanliness, austerity, you know, these things don't exactly fit into science formally like that. So it's a very nice discussion like that, this area of science and religion like that. You know? And so that's, you know, one kind of people. Scientists tend to be very, very narrow-minded, very intense, very precise, like a laser. You know, that's the discipline. You know? But cultural people tend to be more intuitive, more broad. You know? So we have a very, very excellent movie that was made in Peru this last year, based on the book too, when Peruvian director, he wins so many awards, he and his wife, they took out the essence of this thing and made a fantastic movie like that. You know, but I've shown it sometimes to scientists, and they say, well, it's interesting, but it's not, you know, but it's too many images. It's like, it works more in icons like that, you know, rather than it does in just a linear thought like that. So this is designed for a certain kind of people. You know, cultured people, Oriental people are very fond of nature. If you read the Oriental classics, you find such incredible descriptions of nature. Has anybody here ever read Journey to the West? Look on the Wikipedia for Journey to the West, and you'll find something very nice. It's the one of the five great Indian classics. It's also called Monkey, like that. And so one great Chinese sage, he's going to the West from China, to go to India to get more profound scriptures from the Buddha, Tathagata Buddha. And so along the way, he's helped by one, you know, celestial monkey, one celestial pig, and things like that. And then they have one adventure after another. Even now, in China, they produce this again and again. There's, you know, popular television series. And you even see, Monkey, he has a little Mao cap. You know, when communism took over, Monkey became a good communist, like that. And he was there, like that, you know. So one Chinese person told me, "Yeah, if you read this, you know Chinese people, you know Chinese people like that." So many just beautiful descriptions of nature. So Prabhupada made this selection. Yeah, we'll take this one chapter, and it's from the Bhagavad Purana. There's a book by George Hart from the University of California called A Rapid Sanskrit Method. How to learn Sanskrit quickly. You know? And in the preface, he says, well, who would want to learn Sanskrit? You know, it's the classical language of India, but who's like saying you want to learn Latin or something, you know? But he said, but no, there's so much, you know, literature, like Arabic, like, you know, Mandarin. It's been a carrier of culture for thousands of years. So he says the quantity of writing, the depth, the profundity is just staggering. You know? Of course, the British tried to cover all this, you know, during the colonial period. But you start going in, there's architecture, medicine, mathematics, physics. There are descriptions of how to make batteries, you know, 1,000 years before Christ. You know, architectural systems that were used, you know, 3,000 years ago. And it's the same systems for relating to the sun, the energy, the wind, the slope of the land. And it produces a big change in your consciousness, how you are integrated with nature like that. Every morning, if you see the sun rising up in your house, what does that do? Every morning, the sun is coming up in your house, and it's setting behind you. Right? It goes down behind me, but it comes up in front of me. It changes your consciousness like that. And the water, anything like that. So it's called Vastu. It's similar to Feng Shui, like that. So all these different aspects are there. And he says, there's a bibliography maintained by Indologists, a bibliography of all known ancient Sanskrit texts. And it now includes over 160,000 ancient texts like that in all these different areas. And he says there are mathematical systems that would take a Westerner an entire lifetime just to understand one of them like that. So sophisticated in terms of analyzing nature, components, things like that. The grammar, of course, is famous. Then he says, you know, there are great poets like Valmiki, definitely, you know, ranks with the greatest poets. Shakuntala. Kalidas is without a doubt amongst the greatest poets in the world. Mahabharata and Ramayana rank with the Iliad and the Odyssey. And Panini, without a doubt, is the greatest pre-modern grammarian. I think there he's kind of fudging, because even in the modern world, it'd be hard to compete with him in terms of the grammar. And he says then, and the Bhagavat Purana, in my opinion, is the greatest work of devotion ever written, possibly being equaled by other works in the Indian language, meaning Tamil language, like that. You know? And so here it is. It's something incredible. It's really, we have an opportunity to come in contact with a culture that's so old, so rich, so profound, like that. You know? It's not everything. Everybody has their culture. Everybody has something to offer. In the European heaven, the Italians are the cooks. Okay. The French are the lovers. Yeah. The Swiss are the judges. The Germans are the mechanics. And the British, the police. Yeah. The British police system. Yeah. Okay. That's the European heaven. In the European hell, the British are the cooks. Yeah. Name one recipe, one British recipe. Yeah. Fish and chips. Yeah. Yorkshire pudding. Okay. The Swiss are the lovers. Yeah. They're famous for their passion. Yeah. The French are the mechanics. Anybody here ever have a Citroën or this stuff? Yeah. Okay. The Germans are the police. Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. And the Italians are the judges. If you know the Italian law system, it's incredible. It's like, I mean, almost practically speaking, right in the court, people are putting bribes on the judge's table like that. It's like an auction, like, you know. Okay. So every country has its culture. If you look in the Encyclopedia Britannica, it has the history of so many cultures, so many countries, their history, their culture, their nation. But only one country is to talk about the philosophy of that country. And that country is India. Yeah, but it doesn't talk about the mechanics of India. Yeah, the ambassador. Yeah. But so every country has something to contribute like that. You know, I mean, this book was printed in Peru, but with German press. Really, it's hard to beat Germans for good book production, like that, quality. You know. So anyway, tonight we're just maybe kind of, even tonight, just a little introduction about the history and stuff like that. And so we're developing a whole program of, you know, printing the book and making it available and, you know, copies and study like that. And this is our outreach program, you know, meet this culture, come in contact. Oh, I never knew Indian culture was like that. Yeah, because of the British, the best police on the world, the best espionage people on the world, creating this impression. Don't come here, it's all savages. Leave it for us. Yeah. And so after this, we have, he recommends here then the literature of the Goswamis. You know, 500 years ago, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his disciples then were involved in the same process of excavating this tradition, modernizing it, making it available. And they then produced so much fantastic literature to amplify these ideas. So after this, anybody's interested, then we have a whole curriculum that we've gradually developing. ISKCON, the Hare Krishna movement, has a fully accredited university in Belgium. It's accredited by Wales Lampeter University from England. And some of our people are graduating from there with their bachelor's degrees, and now they're headed to Oxford, places like that, from there, like that. So we have many very formal educational programs developing to try and develop this culture like that. For people who are interested in cultivation of the human spirit. It means art, technology. You have to have these things. How can you be a human being unless you have some proper way of getting rid of sewage and taking care of disease and these kind of things like that, you know? So it's, any questions at this point? It's okay? It's clear? Okay. A little bit more in here. So I have these pictures here. I have a PowerPoint show, but in some ways I prefer even this. So we got different things. This is plate number 47. This is 48. And both of these are cosmology, you know? So the cosmology, it says in the highest level of existence, the self is free from the body. It's free from the mind. Just like, for example, you have a sponge, frozen sponge. I am a square sponge. I am a round sponge. Let's fight, right? One time I was leaving Peru to go to Chile. It's about, 4 hours. On the way to the airport, there was this big monument. And I said, what's that? They say, oh, that's for the brave soldiers of Peru who died fighting the evil soldiers of Chile. So I landed. And then by God's arrangement, I was coming to the temple in Chile, and there's the monument. And I said, what's that? Oh, that's for the brave soldiers of Chile who died fighting the evil soldiers of Peru. But it was just like, one time we were in Fajilka, in Ferozpur, in Punjab. And we go down to see the flag down ceremony. It's right on the border between Pakistan and India. And as you go there, there's always like signs in Hindi, don't come in here, landmines in this area. The problem is the animals can't read those, so they get blown up every now and again. It's pretty unfortunate, But there's a whole several hundred meters of like areas which are full of landmines, So you go through that, and there's bunkers ready for the army to move in. There's a ceasefire like thing like that. And finally, you come to the actual area. And it goes kind of down like this. And there's a gate, where they could have meetings and exchanges. There's a hall for having conferences, But on both sides, there's a small garrison of Pakistani soldiers and Hindi soldiers. So we all went there with some people to see this, and we had to get the security check and everything else. And we came there. And then just at sundown, the Pakistani soldiers came out, and the Hindu soldiers, and they all did a whole formal thing together. Then they blew their trumpets together, and they lowered the flags together like that, And on both sides, you see same things being grown, same farmers doing the same kind of work like that. But then there's this whole artificial boundary, created. Even the same families on both sides, really like that, created like that. So this is our consciousness. I'm Hindu. I'm Muslim. I'm Hindu. I'm Pakistani. I'm Hindu. I'm Chileno. I'm a Peruvian. Everybody has this bodily concept of life, like a frozen sponge. I am this meat, like that. But then if you apply a little heat, it melts, right? Becomes soft, and then you become like a little more ethical, moral. Well, come on, we're all people like that and stuff like that, My grandfather was a civil engineer in World War I for the Army Corps of Engineers. And the only time he ever had contact with the enemy was one time he was walking off in France or someplace to get a little relief in the country, away from the fighting zone. And all of a sudden he saw this German soldier across the place like that, some distance, across the street, like distance, And he was an officer, so he didn't know what to do, and the German soldier was looking at him. And my grandfather said he just kind of started reaching for his pistol and pulling it out like that. He didn't know what he was going to do, and then the German soldier saw him like that and just started putting his gun down like that. And then my grandfather had his gun out, the guy had his gun down, and then he started to go towards him, and that guy started to go away, and he started kind of running, and that guy started running, and he said he didn't the slightest idea what he was going to do if he got up with a guy like that, And finally got close enough to the German area like that where, get a little dangerous, my grandfather. And the German soldier kind of slowed down and turned around and looked at my grandfather, and he looked at him, and he kind of waved at my grandfather, and my grandfather said he waved at him and put his pistol away, and that was it, Okay, so we're all people. You know, if we can, many soldiers never shoot to kill. It's a whole psychological training to try and go through to try and train them, because they know in different wars they did investigations, and many soldiers do not shoot to kill on both sides like that. You know? So this is soft sponge, ethics, morality. You begin to realize we're all people. Maybe a little more, you begin to realize the animals are also people, and let's not disturb them if we don't have to. Let's live a simple diet with less violence and stuff like that. And then you start to squeeze the sponge, right? Oh, the water comes out, the ice comes out, you know? And oh, it's a different thing, it's fluid, it moves like that. You apply heat and it can fly like that, you know? But if you tell somebody there's a soul in the sponge and it can fly, oh, you're crazy, you're a madman, like that. No, for different levels, you know? This gross world, then you go to the celestial worlds, and finally, Goloka, you know, describing where Krishna exists. And that level is the level of just pure love. You know? As we go down, the difference is not just being involved with the mind and being involved with the subconscious, but the different, and then being involved with different kinds of gross bodies, cat body, dog body, dwarf body, you know, ghost body. Yeah, it's all these bodies. You know? Yeah. But the difference really is this idea of generosity. You know, the more we go down, the more selfish we become. You see that the animals are kind of generous in some ways, but you just a little bit of pressure and they become extremely self, you know, oriented like that. You know, a cat will catch a mouse and just torture it, you know, for hours just to, you know, get this sadistic pleasure. And that is just the nature of the body like that. You know? So as we go up, we become more generous until finally we're completely giving units. We have no taking. We're no longer taking. We just want to give like that, you know, irregardless. And who to give to? Well, it describes Adi Purusha. There's some person who's full of so many wonderful qualities that everybody naturally just wants to love him. And one of those qualities is that he wants to love everybody else. Whatever you give him, he gives back to you three times, four times as much. There's a very nice story that one man, he died. And he went to you know, heaven, and he was there with God, you know. And he was looking back at the history of his life. And famous story. And it was like footprints, you know, through different kinds of places, through the desert, through the mountains. And he saw his footprints going through different things and different experiences that he had in his life when he was growing up, when he was a young man, when he, you know, had this problem with his bankruptcy, when his wife ran off with somebody, when he ran off with somebody, you know, older, and all these different footprints going through things like that. And there were always two sets of footprints because you could see that, you know, God was with me. All these things, we all these things, you know. But then sometimes there's only one set of footprints, right? And these were the worst times, like that, the very worst times. And then he was feeling a little bad. And he said, well, you know, you were always with me, but when things got really, really tough, it looks like you just abandoned me and let me, you know, like that, you know. So God started laughing and he said, in those really bad times, there's only one set of footprints because that's when I had to carry you. Yeah, draw, God can draw. Yeah. But that's what you hear things like that, and you begin to realize, is there really someone like that? Who you know, one time, Prabhupada, when he was leaving his body, in the very end, he went through all these things. He's showing us what it means to be a saint, what it means to be a good person, what it means to be introspective, mystical, to try and get out of the sponge, you know, taste these other worlds. So one devotee, Amogha Lila, was with him, you know, many devotees in the very end, and he was, you know, just skin and bones. He'd been fasting for a long time, trying to get his liver working again, but it never did, you know. And so he was with him all night. In the morning, some other devotees came in, and Prabhupada just kind of raised his hand like that, because he didn't have enough energy to talk, really. So Amogha Lila didn't know what to do. And Tamal Krishnamurti said, oh, he wants you to massage his hand, you know, circulation like that. So he started massaging Prabhupada's hand. And he said it was just skin and bone. But he said it was, he never felt anything so soft. And he had to be so gentle like that, you know, so on, you know. And he said Prabhupada looked at him and he had this experience. He said he didn't know how long it was. It could have been 3 days, 3 years, or it could have been just one moment. But he just lost time. And he had this impression that, you know, Prabhupada, Krishna, it was impression, just this conviction, this connection and conviction that Krishna was saying, it doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what you do, I will never cease to love you. It was like such a, you know, intense experience. You know, he never forgot that. You know, and so how can I be cruel to anybody else, right? If God has that much, you know, tolerance for me, then how can I be like intolerant to other people? You know, so on. So this is this level. And the reason we leave is because some ontological, you know, dispute. We turn away from God. How many people have read Paradise Lost by Milton? Okay, got one guy over there. Okay. So you haven't read Monkey? Got a lot of work to do here. Good books. So the devil's there in paradise, you know, with other angels, with the other archangels. You're all Christians here, I know that. Boise is famous for being Christian. Okay. Name three archangels. Anybody know three archangels? Huh? For the glory of Boise, Idaho. Michael, Gabriel, Raphael. Okay. Huh? She got that. Michael, Gabriel, Raphael, Uriel, Ariel. These are archangels. Yeah. And there's one more, many more, but one more, Satan. Yeah, Satan was also an archangel. But somehow or other, he decided, you know, he wanted to be in charge of heaven. So he and all of his thousands and thousands of followers, like Mammon, Beelzebub, they all, you know, declared war on God. And they started attacking the throne of God. Milton describes this. That's why great poetry is so wonderful. And so the first day, he's very powerful. He's defeating the other archangels, or having to retreat back. And you know, and the second day, God starts using the blue lightning. Now, I guess you get this at Kmart. I don't know, like that. So, but you know, but Satan didn't know about the blue lightning like that. So then they're going to be getting annihilated by that. But the blue lightning like that, you know, it'd be a great movie. Wow, I don't know if anybody's ever done it. It'd be an incredible movie. Oh, it's just so visual, you know. So then the good angels then are like driving these guys back, and finally they fall off at the edge of heaven with their war machines. You know? And who's the guy? Milton. He describes it's like, you know, grains of sand just falling like this. Just like, you know, this river of sand. There's so many of these thousands and thousands of rebellious angels. You know? And they fall down. Like that. And they're in hell, and there's fire everywhere, a lake of burning sulfur, and all these nasty things, and smoke, and then all they're all lying there with their smashed war machines and chariots, and just intoxicated, lying in pain, suffering, can't move. But Satan is so powerful, he is archangel, he just, by his own willpower, he just lifts himself up and starts to stand up. And Milton says that the biggest pine tree in Norway, right, would just be a matchstick in his hand. This guy's big like that. And he's black. He's got wings. And there he is amongst all this burning sulfur and everything else like that. Were you there? Yeah, were you there? I was there, yeah. Saw it. And so then he, you know, calls his followers Mammon, Beelzebub, and they start coming out onto the dry land. And they build an assembly house called Pandemonium. Pandemonium, that's where that word comes from. And they have a big meeting, you know, and they discuss everything. And they come to this conclusion that all we have to do is say, God, we're sorry. We had a bad day. We made a mistake. You know, we're really sorry. We made a mistake. You know, please forgive us. And we can go right back to paradise, you know, like that. But they come to this conclusion, better to reign in hell than serve in heaven, like that. And that's a fundamental ontological statement. That's what separates us from here and there, you know, like that, you know. And Jack London in The Sea Wolf, he used that phrase again, too, that phrase. If you want to make a lot of money, come to this class, you can make money. Make a bumper sticker. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. And even in Boise, Idaho, I think he was telling some of those. Other places more like that. You know? Yeah. But that is really, it's such a precise statement. This is why it probably says, you want to understand how we left the spiritual world, read Paradise Lost. He really catches it. Because, yeah, I want to be the, even though it's nothing, it's mine, and I'm the controller, you know. She's ugly, she's stupid, she's selfish, she's greedy, but she's mine. He's say the same thing. He's a terrible man, but he's mine. You know, yeah, dominate my woman, dominate my man, you know. Or it's a terrible in Texas. People, like one guy from Texas told me the same thing. Some guy has this piece in the desert. It's full of Gila monsters, cactus, everything else, but it's his. You know? So he hangs on to it. You cross the barbed wire fence, it'll shoot at you. You know, it's that. So everybody has this desire. They want to be the supreme controller, the supreme enjoyer. You know? And we're not designed for that. It's not a proper position. So this whole point, cultivation of the human spirit, means to develop these things. You know? And within this area, we have then more details. There's different devatas, you know. Yamaraj, he's the guy, kind of like Santa Claus, that keeps track of all your good and bad activities, who's doing what. Yeah, there's somebody watching, keeping track. You do a little good thing, you save some bird. Somebody took track of that, you know, like that. You know? And so it's here. You know? And then there's Indra. He's like Zeus, like Jupiter, same thing. King of the celestial beings, like that. And the different devatas that are in charge of the wind, in charge of the earth, to the fairies, the gnomes, you know, the dwarfs, all these guys exist. They're different species. If you go to South America, the jungles, yeah, okay, they exist. Except these things, you know. Too many experiences, you know. Yeah, in Peru and places like that, you still, yeah, have these experiences like that. You know? And so then, yeah, they exist. Yeah. Well, to them, we look like rats. Like rats. They live like 6 times as long as we do, 7 times as long as their intelligence is maybe 5 or 6 times as great as ours. Like that. You know? Rats aren't stupid. Rats can figure out a lot of things. You know, rats aren't. And they have their families, they have their groups, you know. But yeah, they're limited. So to the semi-demigods, we look like rats. To the real demigods, you know, Pachamama, Bhumi, the goddess of the earth, the god of the winds, all the air, the prana, the tactile energy everywhere. All this tactile energy is the body of 49 persons. Like that. It's like our body, so many bacteria here. We're in their body, like that. All the prana is flowing in the universe, the energy like that, tactile energy. So there are 49 of them. I think it's that, 49? Fire gods. So that to them, we look like cockroaches. From their point of view, their lifespan, their intelligence, we look like cockroaches. You know? And cockroaches also have their social activities. When I was treasurer of the temple in San Francisco, I was a monk, brahmachari, and I was sitting in my office in the treasury room there. And my clock was sounding weird, a little electric clock, you know. And finally I thought what was happening is every night the cockroaches would go out and do all their foraging, and they'd come back and they were living in my clock. You know? Yeah. It was hot, and I guess the sound was nice, you know. And then they have their children and everything else. They have some relationship, you know, some sentiment, some feeling. You know? But the soul is almost asleep in that body. The soul is on this very gross consciousness like that. Like you're half awake or very intoxicated, you know, kind of licking something, you know, like that, you know. You know, and that's what cockroaches are like. They have their life, you know. And so then to the semi-demigods who look like rats, to the real demigods who look like cockroaches, and to Brahma, who's the demigod in charge of this particular universe, material universe here, you know? Yeah. We look like atoms and molecules, right? In the age of iron, there are 432,000 years. In the age of bronze, twice as much. In the age of silver, 3 times as much. In the age of gold, there's 4 times as much. So the whole cycle is 10 times. It's 4,320,000 years of the cycle. Your lungs are going in cycle. Your heart's going in cycles. Everything's going in cycles. The universe is going in cycles. You know? So in the age of silver, bronze, gold, everything is very nice. You got in the age of bronze, you got Merlin the magician. You got Methuselah, 1,000 years. Very nice. But the age of gold, wow, you know, still material. So, are these cycles, okay, like our heart, 1,000 of these cycles make 1 day of Brahma, the being in charge of this particular prison, this particular universe. He lives for 30 days in a month, 12 months in a year, he lives for 100 years. So do the mathematics. This guy's got a long lifespan, long lifespan. But still he dies. He also dies at that. So to him, we look like atoms and molecules at that. But all these places, all these different demigods, right? It's all still based upon this fundamental principle of egoism, egotism. And only find when we go through the ontological principle can we get out like that and start to develop our human spirit, our real personal spirit like that. So this is the light of the Bhagavat. It's just a little, it's an intense sample, all here in one, like a sample too. You realize I'm just getting a little taste of these things like that, a little bit from this part, a little bit from that part, a little bit from this part. Yeah. There's more. Is there more? Yeah, okay. And we have a whole progressive literature like that. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Upadeshamrita, like that. And then the Bhagavad itself, Srimad Bhagavatam itself, 18,000 verses like that. So, other things, there's actually two more topics. I don't know here, but it's okay. This is our cosmology. This is what now Charles Townes, the Nobel laureate, he's saying, myself, other people are interested in this Oriental cosmologies because there was never this split. Ethics and morality are tied in. The more you know about nature, the more better person you are, right? One reporter during a press conference was becoming very like arrogant with Richard Nixon, just challenging him and stuff like that. And so Dick Nixon said, you don't know who I am, do you? And the guy said, what do you mean? He said, I can go in the next room and make one phone call, and in 45 minutes, over 100 million people will be dead. Mr. President. What a speak of the Secret Service Agency and everything else under his control like that. So it's a lot of power concentrated in one person's hands. Has he got sufficient ethical and moral development, character, to deal with that? The mechanism requires a mysticism. This is one Nobel laureate made this comment. This mechanism we're building requires a mysticism to make it healthy like that. So the Bhagavad is all integrated. The more you know about nature, the better person you are. Like that. You always use it properly. So you can acquire vast powers, vast abilities. Really, it's a fact. Again, you give these examples of Prabhupada. He manifests different things time. And different times he would manifest different physical powers and abilities which were extraordinary like that. But it was all tied in with mature spiritual realization like that. It was a very wonderful text. Any questions? This is our cosmology. It includes material nature. It also includes some moral, ethical, and finally ontological nature like that. She's asking at different levels. The fairies, Mother Earth, and then Brahma, how they see us. Krishna's point of view is eternal. He always sees us from the point of view of eternity. Eternity doesn't mean for a long time. Eternity means no time, like that. Some boy has been pulled over by the police for drunk driving, something like that. And then, something like that. And then, they're trying to write the tickets up. This guy's going to go off to jail, this and that, so on. And then some car stops, Mercedes Benz, and the window rolls down. The guy says, "What's happening? What's happening here, officer?" "Oh, superintendent of the police." He said, "Oh, Mr. Superintendent, we pulled this guy over drunk driving, like this and that. How fast was he going? What was he doing? This and that, sir. Okay. I'll take care of this. He's my son." I'll take care of this. He's my son. Okay. So now, he can go to jail for 15 minutes or he can go to jail for 15 years, right? Because now it's a personal thing. It's not a matter of just applying the law. So when we actually start dealing with Krishna, all these laws are his external representation. When you're in the kingdom, you're under the king's influence. The king has certain laws. It's a good person, they're good laws, everyone prospers. But when actually you start dealing with the king, it's tricky because now the laws don't apply. He can apply them if he wants to, or else he can. Same way in the court, if you get what's the word, contempt of court, the judge can send you to jail, and there's no, you can stay there forever. There's different things like that, but basically, they're not under the control now of the actual law system. There's no law which controls the judge in terms of that. So now it's eternal. So Krishna sees us from that point of view, from a personal point of view, like that. He doesn't see us in terms of different time reactions, something like that. Time is the external manifestation of the super soul. Time is the external manifestation of the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit. This material world is existing. It's energy. God enters into it as the Holy Spirit, the Paramatma, and then the inert material nature then takes on forms. Hello, how are you? Is there food tonight? Maybe so. Yeah. I'm getting hungry. Okay. Yeah. So if we look internally, we see the Holy Spirit. We see Paramatma. He's giving us advice. Do this, don't do that, act this way. This is beauty, this is aesthetics. Appreciate this. But if you look externally to dominate everything, then we see time. How can I manipulate time? How can I get to the bank? How can I make this, do that deal? But ultimately, if we look that way, time is death. That's the ultimate conclusion of all time is destruction. And so then, time is the external relationship. How God relates to us, because he has to relate to us. We're so small, And so he relates to us as time in different ways like that. And as we mature, we have a more mature relationship with time. Anybody, this is my age group here. Anybody here know the rock group called White Bird? Remember them? Huh? They're different. No, I don't know. It was Johnny Bird was the guy who was in and out of mental hospitals. He was like, people weren't sure if he was a mystic or a psychotic. He was like, one time, I think it was Eric Clapton or something. One time they just did this big concert with 1,000 people. He started looking into Eric Clapton's eyes, and they just went on for like 30 minutes, just like, everybody just watched. So they have one song I always remember. It's called Time. It starts off with the drum going tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. Really musical. Time is too fast for those who wait, and time is too, it's one thing after another. It was really incredible because you're dealing with God. But for those who really love, time is eternity. And went off into this incredible, just like music thing like that, So that's time. Time is the external manifestation of the Holy Spirit, the super soul, the Paramatma. And when we begin to relate to Krishna, we're not relating to him in that feature anymore. Now we're relating to him directly. So he sees us always from the point of view of our eternal characteristics. So, another question. Yes? It's being displayed, but through so many coverings, so many blankets are on top of us. If you see a blanket moving, somebody's under it. But you don't know if it's a boy, it's a girl, it's a child, anything like that. But you know there's somebody under it. So we're just like the soul is just like, really reacting through so many different kinds of reactions, karma. We're not necessarily men or women because of our karma. Men are from Mars, women are from Venus. So you get a certain kind of mentality, a certain way of analyzing things like that. One Jewish girl, she was talking to one philosopher in Peru like that, and he was kind of opposed to the Indian caste system, women and that. And he was Jewish, so she was devotee, and she was saying, he says, no, I also, as a background, I was right. It's a fact. He says, men and women have a different way of looking at things. Men hear with one ear, women hear with two ears. details, but generally speaking, it's just in different ways. And it's not, we're different. And therefore, the thing is, you know, not to try and artificially make everybody fit the same standard. So, but that's not us. That's just the kind of body we got into, like that. So yeah, the fact that we're alive and we're conscious, and human form of life you can see, and the bacteria form is very covered. Human form of life, you can begin to see this. Human being starts to manifest these qualities. Human being's conscious. Human being can make some choices. Sometimes they're very hard choices to make, but a human being can, like, I'm not going to do that. You know? Ah, my God. You know? It's like, obviously, there's examples. Science can, Einstein said, science can tell us how things are, but it can't tell us how they should be. Right? You get this Enola Gay, this great airplane at the end of World War II, goes clear across the Pacific Ocean, maybe from Guam, I don't know, navigating over thousands of miles of open ocean like that. The Enola Gay. And then finally it comes to the Japanese mainland, it keeps on going, and finally it comes to, I guess, was it Hiroshima? Like that. And some distance there, the pilot's there, and he's talking to the bombardier, you know, 25 miles to the target, this and that, you know, activate the instrument, instrument activated, okay, open the bomb bay doors open, okay, 5 miles to target, you know, ready to transfer control, okay, accepting control, bombardier, you are flying the airplane. And they actually transfer it to the bombardier at the end like that. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, coming in, target. And at some point, I don't know the person's name, I don't know who his wife was, I don't know, you know, where he was from, who his high school teacher was, but at some point, one person pushed the button like that, you know, and 140,000 people died like that. So, you know, science can tell us how things are, but it can't tell us how they should be. You know, you can, should I push the button or not? I guess, I'm not going to do it. What do you mean you're not going to do it? It's wrong. But it's not, we don't decide those things. I don't care. I'm deciding I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to kill those people. You know? Yeah, so it's like, human being begins to manifest these qualities of the soul, but they're more or less covered. Some people in human body are very gross, very, you know, animalistic, and some people are very, seem very great, very mature. So is the karma. But even animals, sometimes you see animals also can display nobility, right? Yeah. But it's difficult because they're more like animals. they react. So, in the human form of life, it's beginning to show. Yep. I guess so. I'm going to stop. 5 more minutes, because I am German. Vaishnava. Yeah?
That's not an eternal characteristic, it's just like black and white and covered with this, right? Like some people just have certain tendencies, like whoever they know they are musicians.
Yeah, yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the first time he saw people lifting weights, it was like, it was, he said it, it was just like, first time he saw them, he said, that's it. You know, he was with his girlfriend Heidi. And he said, Heidi, could you go home by yourself? And he said, well, okay, Arnold. You know, and it was just, he found his life. You know. Yeah, it's karma. In a human body, it's almost, yeah, it can become purified to such a point that it becomes transparent. In the beginning, we're like this. You know, we get all these different anxieties. I kicked him, he kicked me, she did that, I did that. You know, all these different tensions and my mother tortured me when I was a little girl, and I'm going to get revenge. And, you know, it happens. All these things, mostly childhood traumas. And we do all this character, you know, and then we start to get rid of this knot and that knot. And you go through. Psychologists will take you through this stuff, right? Sometimes you go through this stuff. And he works in the prison, and you go through people's lives, and you see that this guy had some trauma when he was a child, and it wasn't in this lifetime. You know, it was something that was traumatic in a child last lifetime, and he's just got this. It's not good. He's just got, finally, he's got to let it go. And then he can start to have, you know. So finally, you know, you can come out of the senses. The senses just become instruments. They become a clear lens. So yeah, sometimes in some human being, the actual soul is starting to come out, express itself, right? Express itself. But usually, it's just reactions from your different material choices you made, different material experiences you had, like that. Yeah. 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 To come out.
And vice versa, and when the older inmate some distance with his son or daughter.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. We've been doing some linear lines.
Yeah.
And yesterday we did experiment with spirituality.
Yeah.
So we brought spirituality into the so they were describing things, which is consciousness.
Yeah.
We use the word consciousness, awareness. And it was one of them, but they're all the same thing, it's consciousness.
Yeah.
So they were looking at it, and then we're going to have them do the following week, actually write all this stuff down, and then put it on neat video.
Oh, my God.
Or start what we call another graphic, so they can actually send this out. So this is kind of like you said, unraveling.
Yeah.
It starts to come out.
Yeah.
And then they can have a real view of where they are.
And you're starting
actually is participating, watching it. It's amazing.
It's frightening. Yeah, yeah, it is. It is. I'm having the same experience. You're starting to get into astrology. You know, that kind of stuff. Again, more and more, it's just happened. Not just us. So many groups are starting to have this east-west, you know, connection like that. Because this is the modern world. It's never happened before in recent history. So maybe kind of want to stop here. And tomorrow is, the program is tomorrow. We have a regular festival every Sunday, and more kirtan, chanting, aarti, like that. And then after that, we'll talk a little bit more maybe about this Bhagavad-Bhagava program. And this time, I'm here very quickly this time. I had to stay in Chile until the 9th of March, and I have to leave for Europe the 15th of April, so we just kind of real quick, come here, so if we kind of limited it down. Miami, Seattle, Boise, San Jose, Tucson, Houston, Tennessee. That's where our base is for our academic organization, NEOS. So we're here very briefly, you know. But other people here are also involved in developing this. If anybody has any more questions, certainly, you know. And then we're going to probably come back, I think, for 4th of July. Big festival. I hear you guys are a big festival here. One of the best 4th of July festivals in America. One time we were in the Weezer, Idaho, old-time fiddlers competition.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago. We built a cart there, and they were like, Weezer, Idaho, fiddlers, thing like that. But maybe we'll see if we're going to come back again. So it's a whole big project, is to take some of the literature. I think you have a very nice selection of literature here. And then, jump in. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada Gita. We have the movie available too. The movie is available.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Not the book. No, you can make some copies.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
DVD. Yes. DVD. It's very beautiful, you know, movie depicting all these paintings and being in the background and stuff. So, anyone wants a copy?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for coming to this program. Now we have dinner in the next room.
Ah, okay.
So I have to go and join. And I would like to thank Mother Manini for being today's speech and all the, private class. We would like to reserve tradition to give a plate of Mahaprasad over with the feast.
This is the real light of the Bhagavad. If anybody wants to talk after?
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. If you have any questions, you can please comment in the chat. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ear, nose.
These are roach
references. What is this?